the station with more hair, more flair, yet so debonair.
RadioInfluence.com.
They got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow.
And here comes as I mentioned. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's outwitched Franklin. Retained his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC on Fox 25 will take place on Saturday night in Long Island, and we are going to preview this fight card on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Daniel Galvan and I are going to break down the fights, give our top five fights, tell you which fighters are at the crossroads, and give our picks for the fights. Now, before we start previewing UFC on Fox 25, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Fight TV. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV, using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Of course, on Saturday, they will have the ACB car that's going to be headlined by Thiago Silva. On Friday night, they're going to have the Real Fighting Championship 40 car, which is a card here in Tampa that I will be attending. My tickets, and absolutely amazed how many fees there are on Ticketmaster, but looking forward to enjoying the fights tonight here in Tampa. Of course, recording this here on Friday morning. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. Sounds like you got it going on today. Have you picked out your UFC fighter kit you're going to wear? Who are you going to wear? Are you going to wear a Rumble Johnson?
I will tell you this right now. If I see someone wearing a UFC fighter kit, I will definitely put that up on Instagram and Twitter.
Okay, they should not be ashamed. It is a very fashionable choice. You look like a walking barcode. And, I bet you'll see a McGregor one. I mean, I feel like Conor McGregor's fighter kit has to be the highest selling.
I've always seen two fighter kits ever of someone wearing them, and that one was McGregor, the other was Rousey. I would look, if someone had, like, a Chris Wade fighter kit, I'd be shocked. I mean,
What is Chris Wade's mother doing here? He's got a fight tomorrow.
By the way, speaking of Reebok, did you see they hired Boss Logic to help design fighter t-shirts?
I mean, like, awesome. That's cool. That's a great idea, because t-shirts is like the predominant moneymaker for so many people in the landscape of the world right now. If you just look across them, across, you know, a lot of these YouTube stars, a lot of the independent pro wrestlers, a big way they make money is they just sell cool t-shirts. Now, I've actually never thought about this for mixed martial arts fighters in a way of getting income, but I wonder if you're a UFC fighter, if you make your own shirt with like a slogan, for example, you're Taruto Ishihara, and you say, you know, I like my whatever.
Come on, just say it. I like my
bitches. If you say that.
No, it's I love my bitches. Come on. You gotta get the slogan right.
Jason, I'm tired of the misogyny. I think if he made that shirt and he sold that shirt, would the UFC want a piece of that pie? Is that like something they're legally obligated to get into or no?
I would say no. I mean, I did an interview with Kyle Bochniak late last week. It's actually video interview is already up on themareport.com. Was also on this week's MMA Report podcast, and he had a shirt that was just his nickname, Crash. It's a shirt that he put together and actually told me he's pretty much sold out of the church at this point.
Yeah, man, that's a great way to make a little bit of money. You just see that strategy among a lot of independent wrestlers.
And the thing with him, you remember when Jocko had that Rumble shirt? It just said Rumble on it. All his shirt says is Crash. It is simple and to the point. By the way, I was actually, I think maybe on last week's preview podcast, we were talking about Affliction shirts. I was in the mall the other day, and I saw some of those glorious Affliction shirts. Well, I almost text you a picture of it.
I, We need to buy some, man, and just rock them while we record so we get in the mood. Before we record the preview podcast, I usually like put on Face the Pain. But if I can if I can throw on an Affliction shirt, maybe some Ed Hardy pants before we do this, I mean, it's astonishing. That was a crazy time, man, how prominent Affliction was, and everybody had a tap out shirt. There really has been a void of mixed martial arts apparel since they signed the Reebok deal. It's just not too fashionable to wear a fighter kit. You know, you can't go to the bar with a fighter kit and expect a good time.
Yeah, you just don't see fighter kits out there. It's unfortunate, I think, for fighters because they're quote unquote supposed to get a percentage of that. And just because, I mean, A, they're priced at a ridiculous price point that no one's going to buy them. I mean, I think if you put if Reebok had a $25, $30 shirt, a signature shirt for every fighter or majority of fighters, I think that it would be something that could sell. But the way they are right now, I mean, I think they're like $70, $80, $90, something like that. I mean, who's paying for that?
It's
they're awful. Demanding.
Yeah, because guess what? If you're a mixed martial arts fan, more than likely you're a fan of other sports. And if you have that kind of disposable income, you got to make a uniform that outshines a team sport. If I'm a fan of the Dallas Stars, man, I would much rather spend that exact same amount of money for a sweet Tyler Seguin jersey than a UFC fighter kit. It's just because, for one, you just have more of an attachment to a team than a single fighter. And then with the shirt that just has either a Reebok logo on the top left or a big UFC lettering, it just isn't a sexy shirt. I just think that Boston Logic, you said, was the name of the t-shirt company that designed the shirts.
Boston Logic, the guy who does all the custom, does his own custom UFC posters. Who should be hired by the UFC?
He's the guy that does the good ones.
Yeah.
So they hired him to design shirts.
Yeah, I saw that awesome. Like a couple days ago. I saw that come across my Twitter timeline. I was like, that's a great move by Reebok.
Yeah, I thought Boston Logic was this catchy t-shirt company in Boston, but yeah, that's a great move. That's a smart move. There are so many talented people. Remember that guy, I don't know what his name, his first name was Nick, I think. He would always make the sweet pre-fight video packages for main events.
Oh, yeah.
Is he still around making those videos? Did they hire him?
I don't know. I don't know if he's still around.
That guy was awesome, if you're listening.
But we do, of course, on Saturday night, we've got UFC on Fox 25 and four-fight main card, Chris Weidman versus Kelvin Gastelum, Dennis Bermudez versus Darren Elkins, Pat Cummings against John Vellante, Jimmy Rivera versus Thomas Almeida. That's your four fights that will be on Fox at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. out on the West Coast. You'll have four prelims on Fox and five prelims on UFC Fight Pass. All starts at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on UFC Fight Pass. Your prelims on Fox will start at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. All week, as I have been thinking about this main event, I don't know what the hell is going to happen. I mean, look, fighting is so unpredictable because you never know, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, you don't know what's been going on inside the fighters' training camp. You don't know if they've gotten sick on fight week or whatnot. But when it comes to Weidman and Gastelum, I know who I'm going to pick, but man, I don't feel comfortable about it.
Does this mean I think I have the exact same pick as you, and I feel the exact same way, which usually tells me that I'm probably making.
I will say this. I switched my pick this morning.
I did not switch my pick. Since the fight was announced, I've been all aboard for this guy in particular, but I like what you're saying here. Unpredictable is definitely the word. From the moment these two step on the scale, which they have not done yet, correct?
Yes, they have stepped on the scale. They've both made weight.
They both made weight?
Yes, they both
Kevin made weight. Kevin Gastelum made weight?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Thank goodness gracious. So that is done. We have the fight to look forward to. So much unpredictable. And post-fight, I mean, who knows what either guy could announce. We could have a retirement from Chris Weidman with a bad loss. Kelvin Gastelum could make the commitment to drop down to 145 pounds. Anything could happen. But in this fight in particular, I really am – from the moment this fight was announced, I was leaning towards Chris Weidman to return to form and make a comeback. But the more and more I've thought about this fight, the less and less good I feel about it, Jason, just because Kelvin Gastelum has looked incredibly violent lately. He has a phenomenal stand-up game, and he continues to improve as fights prolong. And most importantly, Chris Weidman has looked very, very bad in moments when he's been on the receiving ends of barrages of strikes. And I'm just concerned that Chris Weidman will come into this fight, look really good early on, and get caught with the flurry of strikes as the fight goes on.
Initially, heading into today, I was going to pick Kelvin Gastelum. But as I just, you know, thought more and more about this fight today, I think the thing that I come back to is I think Chris Weidman will fight a very safe fight. It will not be the most exciting fight, but he's going to do what he needs to do to get the victory.
This is not good for our picks if we both are picking Weidman. I know it for a fact.
Congratulations, Kelvin Gastelum, on your victory.
I tell you what, though. I certainly could see that if we see an early effort for him to attempt the wrestling and take him down and grapple him. To me, that would be the much smarter approach. Weidman obviously has a solid stand-up game, as does Kelvin Gastelum. If this fight stays on the feet throughout five rounds, I think we both would agree that we would favor Kelvin both from a power standpoint and volume output and whatnot. I don't know if you disagree there, but I do think, like you, we will see Chris Weidman utilize his takedown game. Kelvin's tough to take down, but I actually think Weidman will get that success early. And the other part that worries me, a big deal, is that this is a main event, that this is a five-round fight. And Kelvin at 185, I think, is in a much better position to continue to maintain his own intensity and pace over five rounds than at 170. And for Chris Weidman, it does seem like he has recently had quite a big – these huge dumps in cardio. It's and maybe for him it was just nearly getting finished. That took so much out of him, and that's not something that's repeatable. But I'm really concerned that what we're going to see here, man, is a nice moment for Weidman early, only to get put away late.
Kind of like what we saw at UFC 210?
100%, yeah. I mean, this could be a coming-out party for Kelvin Gastelum. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's the slight favorite.
That was one of the things I wanted to bring up, because I was looking at the odds on bestfightodds.com. As we're recording this podcast, Kelvin Gastelum minus 160. Chris Weidman plus 150, and according to Best Fight Odds, when this fight opened, Kelvin Gastelum was plus 115, which means the betting public has made Kelvin Gastelum the favorite, where, you know, the odds makers had Chris Weidman as a favorite.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, just because, first off, like, Chris Weidman just has not won a fight since 2015. His entire UFC career he reached an incredible peak, but like anything, man, what we've learned doing this preview show is your resume becomes less and less impressive at a rapid rate. If you just look at his run of wins in the UFC, it's Alessio Sakara, Jesse Bongfelt, Tom Lawler, Damian Maia, Mark Munoz, Anderson Silva, Lyoto Machida, Vitor Belfort. Those are the fighters that Weidman has beaten. And, I don't know, man. I just think for Chris Weidman, it's just been a very long time since we've seen him showcase what we remember him as. And it's been years since, and it's emotional. There's so much pressure for a guy like that, because he's facing a 3-fight losing streak with the opportunity to lose 4 in a row, and he isn't getting a matchup that is easy at all. He went and he took on Musasi. He took on Romero. He took on Rockhold. And his reward is a guy in Kelvin Gastelum who, true talent level, may in fact be higher than the way we think about him now. Because having watched Kelvin fight recently, it does seem like he's really turned it into another gear. It really does appear as though he's made a big step up in his talent level and what he's going to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the last time we saw Chris Weidman win a fight was 26 months ago against Vitor Belfort.
I mean, how many?
May 23rd, 2015.
I mean, Jason, in 2 years, how many? What fighter that Weidman has beaten will not be retired? Like, Uriah Hall may not be retired. But I mean, Damian Maia is up there in age. He may go I mean, Damian Maia is the kind of guy that I'm pretty sure he has a side gig as a UFC referee. He just hasn't told anybody. But, I mean, so many of these fighters, Vitor, Machida, Silva, they are incredibly up there in age. And it would be one of the sadder things, I think, if Chris Weidman isn't able to kind of regain that glory he once had, because it does feel rushed. The rise to championship material, the epic intro coming out to Won't Back Down, the American hero, Chris Weidman. He just seemed like a true American hero for just his attitude with his father in his corner, et cetera, with Sarah and Longo in his corner. It does seem like we didn't get the beautiful story that was Chris Weidman, and I hope we do get it, and I think we will get a win here for Chris Weidman. But again, there is incredible trepidation, and it's one of those predictions where when you do make it, it's almost like your heart tells you Weidman that he's going to return to form and you want to believe it, but your brain, the logical part of your sense, tells you that Kelvin Gastelum has a significant advantage on the feet as good as Weidman is, and it's only a matter of time until he puts him away.
But I think one of the questions about the fight is how does Kelvin Gastelum get inside on Chris Weidman, because he does have a 7-inch reach disadvantage in this fight. I mean, that's kind of where I think if Chris Weidman fights a smart fight, he keeps on the outside, and stays away from the volume of Kelvin Gastelum. I mean, look, Kelvin Gastelum, he's not a 185er, let's be honest about it. He's really a 175-pound fighter, because I don't think the UFC is ever going to let him drop to 170, even though when I talked to Kenny Florian, he kind of seems to think that maybe the UFC is going to give him that option at some point, but I just don't think it's ever going to happen for Kelvin Gastelum. But it's a huge fight for Chris Weidman. To me, this is my number two fight of the weekend, and I will tell you, I kind of had a tough time figuring out my list for top five fights for this weekend. I don't know if you were in the same boat or not.
Yeah, this is a bad card for Fox. The first fight we have, I know we have the same fight, is phenomenal. But I seriously, when I made my third pick for Fox, for this card, my third pick is a freaking UFC Fight Pass fight. That's my third.
I will say two of my five are Fight Pass prelims.
Yeah, and I only have one on there, but I there's a couple other appetizing ones. And look, I will watch anything. This is a fun card. I'm looking forward to, honestly, I'm looking forward to Chase Sherman against Damian Grabowski, just to see Chase Sherman's personality. Oliveira, LaFlair, Bermudez, Elkins, Cummings, Vellante. This is all important. But I don't want to beat this horse in the ground, because we kind of talked about it in the last show, but this is just another example of, like, God, these Fox cards don't feel special. And when they don't feel special, when this really hurts is like the last Fox card we just had, which was just spectacular, but it doesn't necessarily have that mystique. I mean, that Fox card had like the flyweight title. It had Namajunas, Watterson, and I think it had a Robert Whittaker fight.
Yes, Whittaker and Jacare.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God, that's phenomenal. So essentially what I'm saying is, if on your other Fox cards you don't do it justice and go super special with only four fights, 2-hour broadcast or 2.5-hour broadcast, 3-hour broadcast, when you do actually bring your best fruit to the farmer's market, people aren't going to realize it, right? Like if you're known for always bringing mediocre apples and one day you bring in special apples, there's not going to be a demand to consume your special apples, because the expectation is that they're mediocre apples. This is a fun card for us. This is a great main event. But this is just it's lacking the sizzle, man. And I'm very interested to see what the ratings will be like for not only the main card on Fox, but the prelim card on Fox. I mean, these two broadcasts are going to be on national TV. There's an expectation for sports to do a great rating, and it probably will. But not a fantastic rating, I would assume.
And, of course, number one for both of us is Jimmy Rivera versus Thomas Albeda. I mentioned number two for me is Weidman Gastelum. Number three through five was very tough for me. I did put Dennis Bermudez, Darren Elkins, just because of what it means to the 145-pound division. Number four, I went with Brian Kelleher, Marlon Vera. I just think that's just going to be a fun fight to watch. And number five, the reason I went with this fight number five is more about interested to see the UFC debut of Eric Anders as he takes on Rafael Nadal. Eric recently won the LFA middleweight title, took this fight on 10 days notice, and he told me, he said, 10 days notice, 10 weeks notice, it doesn't matter. I don't have training camps. I'm just always training. So really interested in that matchup. I think there's some other matchups that'll be kind of interesting to see how they play out. Kyle Bochniak and Jeremy Kennedy, both those guys have gone back and forth on social media. You know, Cummings and Vellante, I think that, you know, and I think we talked about this a little bit on the post-fight podcast, that's if Pat wins, it's because he wrestles John Vellante for three rounds, or if John wins, it's just because he knocks out Pat Cummings. In terms of, you know, other things I'm interested to see on this fight card, you mentioned about Chase Sherman, and you talk about a fighter taking advantage of things they can control. You know, you look at how certain fighters have gone out of their own way to create this this mystique around them via social media. Think of Derek Lewis. I think Elias Theodoro is another one. And Chase Sherman, you have to put up there of somebody that, because they have just gone all in on social media, all of a sudden, you know, fans have become more intrigued with them.
I think it all started for him. I could be wrong here, but I feel like it really started with I don't know what he said about how he would follow everybody that retweeted this tweet if something absurd happened.
Yeah.
And then the absurdity happened. I don't remember what the event was. I don't know if it was a fight or whatnot. Do you remember? Do you know what I'm talking about? He said something.
He's done it multiple times.
Yeah, but it was crazy.
Just because I've been following Chase for a long time, but it was probably over the last 6 months, I want to say, that, you know, and I don't know how much maybe it was his management, which he's represented by First Round Management. If maybe they said something to him, say, look, to kind of raise your profile, look at what some of these other fighters have done, and he's absolutely raised his profile. I mean, look, the guy was on Errol Hawani's show in studio this week, which I think was a very smart move by Chase to go up to New York one day earlier than he initially planned to be a part of that show, because that's only going to help raise his profile. It is a fight I do like him to win. I think that if Damian Grabowski loses, I believe he'll be cut by the UFC. He's one of four fighters on this card that I believe is at the crossroads.
Whoa, crossroads, choo-choo. Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is we were talking prior, Jason, about how many fighters we had kind of here at the crossroads. I mean, who do you have here just in total across this card, do you think, are at the crossroads?
Oh, I've got four guys, and I think it's pretty clear who the four are.
Who do you got?
Weidman, Nadal, Grabowski, and Wade.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to lose for so much of those guys, especially to me. The big one is Rafael Nadal that you mentioned there, just because having lost two in a row, a guy with a pretty underrated talent level. Not a name that is incredibly recognizable given the sheer quantity of fights he does have. But for him, a third loss in a row against a debuting fighter would be devastating. And unfortunately for Nadal, I do think he has a tough matchup. And I do think Eric Anders will put him in a rough situation. So what you see here, I think, is a lot of veteran-type fighters that are on the opposite end of kind of the younger guys that with the loss, it could be absolutely devastating. So I do agree with you. As far as my top five fights go, totally in unison. Rivera Almeida is number one. Five is Ryan LaFleur and Alex Oliveira. I'm very excited to see just what takes place in this fight. I think these are two highly skilled welterweights. Four is Elkins Bermudez. I swear to God, how absurd is it that we have Darren Elkins in our top five for fights we're looking forward to? But geez, that last fight against Mirsad Bektik was a fun one. The come from behind win for Elkins. Looking forward to that fight. It's just important at 145. And number three on Fight Pass, here's a dark horse of fight of the night. Featherweight bout between Gato Freire Pepe and Shane Burgos. I think both these guys are incredibly exciting. Very aggressive, especially Godofredo. And I think Shane Burgos is very talented. I think he has a significant room to grow and climb up the ranks. And I think he starts with a win over Pepe. But you mentioned you had Marlon Vera, right, for that fight with Kelleher. I mean, that one's interesting to me. And I saw you talk to Marlon Vera. for him, I think he was saying how this is like his big move from Ecuador to the United States, right? Like this is how long? When did he make that move?
It's been several months ago.
So he was training in Ecuador like prior to that?
Not for the picket fight, but I want to say right at the start of his UFC career, he was still in Ecuador.
Damn, I wonder what that scene is like. Because I mean,
he basically said he just trained with friends. He didn't have he didn't hop high level, and so it was more of he knew to take his career to the next level, he had to come to the United States. I mean, look, and he had a great performance against Brad Pickett back in February, and got a performance of the night. I believe it's two of his last three fights. He's got a performance of the night bonus. I mean, you know, once again, it's going to be a situation where, you know, Brian is going to have a reach disadvantage. So how can he, you know, get in the inside of that and take away that reach advantage that Marlon Vera is going to have?
Yeah, man, you see it all the time when these fighters make these massive improvements in training camp. So I'm not really sure where Volkan Ozdemir was training prior, but I believe not too long ago, just a few fights ago, he made that transition to come down to Florida mm-hmm. and train with Henry Hooft. And you saw how that worked out. So I can only imagine the gap in training level from where Marlon was prior to where he is now. He showcased some level of potential and the ability to really be a quote-unquote UFC fighter, dedicate that. You could see him kind of completely upgrade his game six fights in. But the Brad Pickett fight was a big one for him. He kind of put Pickett in a rough situation with the knockout. It was a great fight. I kind of see that fight going the distance between Vera and Kelleher. But, yeah, that's a sneaky good fight that I'm also kind of looking forward to as well. I mean, there are good fights on this card. I think Lyman Good in the fight with Dos Santos he's taking on could be a good one as well. I kind of anticipate that one being another stand-up affair and a good way to close out the prelim card.
Talk about the craziness. This is the first time we're going to see Lyman Good since he won his UFC debut in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, you got to – that's a deal where he was kind of on the shelf for, I think, what, steroids or what?
Well, he had he pulled out of a fight, and then he ended up getting suspended by USADA 6 months, claimed a tainted supplement, which USADA did believe his story in that one. So, I believe it was a steroid.
I'm not a big supplement guy. I don't know if you've seen my body. How the hell do all these supplements get tainted?
I honestly, the thing you hear about is just it's a way they're made in labs where, you know, lab may have something they're make that's being made that has a banned substance. I mean, I think a lot of the situation, and hopefully fighters have kind of learned about this, is simply just fighters who are just, you know, taking whatever because, you know, someone tells them about it, then all of a sudden they get caught by USADA. I mean, we know you're on the Buffalo Wild Wings diet. We know that.
Yeah, I am on it's really helping my core, you know, because you eat enough Buffalo Wild Wings and you will be able to protect your core with that nice thick layer over the core after you eat the wings. So I've never had a buffalo wing that's tainted, Jason. I've never, because there is drug testing. USADA does cover this podcast, and I've stayed clean throughout.
And, you know, we did get a question from Chris McCann who said, hey, he's a massive Buffalo Wild Wings fan. And he needed to know your top three sauces, and is it traditional or boneless?
Okay, first off, look, I only go to two places for my wings, Buffalo Wild Wings and Wingstop. I you know what I hate? People that are like, oh, I hate Wingstop or I hate Buffalo Wild Wings. It's like they both serve buffalo wings. They're both freaking great. I love wings from anywhere. Wings are amazing. There shouldn't be like hardcore opinions about them from a negative standpoint. Buffalo wings are absolutely beautiful. So that's a long way of saying I don't go as often as I would like because I spend so much money when I do go. So I do, I swear to God, I get 20 wings every time I go, and I get 10 traditional and 10 boneless. That is my general meal. And so traditional is much better, but there's something really enjoyable about eating boneless wings. But traditional is absolutely the way to go. But if someone makes fun of you for getting boneless, they're just sad inside. When you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, to me, what I always love doing is getting an appetizer. It's a real power move when you're with your friends And I used to get like this jalapeno bacon cheese thing they used to have. I think they were called jalapeno poppers, but they disbanded them, which is a travesty. So I always start off with the big basket of cheese curds, and I cannot recommend that highly enough. But in terms of top three sauces, I'm interested to hear your input, Jason, because I know you like going there too. But here's where I would rank it. Number one, my personal favorite, and it would be Asian Zing. I just think it's super eatable. You can go and order 20 Asian Zing wings and rip right through it. I mean, the problem with my number two sauce, mango habanero, is you can't. It's just too hot after a while, but it's incredibly delicious. So I would go Asian Zing, mango habanero. By the way, Wingstop used to have this like spicy Korean cue that was like exactly like Asian Zing, just a little better, but they cheated because they copied. Anyways, number three, spicy garlic sauce wings. But here's the deal. Not only do you get the spicy garlic, and this works real well with boneless, but you need to ask for salted vinegar seasoning on the wings. You go spicy garlic, and then they sprinkle some salted vinegar seasoning, and when you eat it, it's like a phenomenal taste in your mouth. So those are my top three, Jason. Asian Zing, mango habanero, and then spicy garlic with salt and vinegar seasoning. What's your favorite?
I actually had Buffalo Wild Wings last night.
Oh, and, my gosh. That's two times in the last week. I'm proud of you, right? Oh, wait. Did you not go for the
We did not go because the Buffalo Wild Wings they built by my house, they are not showing UFC pay-per-views. There's three other locations here in the Tampa Bay area that are, but unfortunately, that location is not showing them, which I am very disappointed in.
So what'd you get? What'd you get?
I got some garlic parm traditional wings. We got the large order of wings because they don't list how many numbers are in wings. So we got the large and got some potato wedges. We got the roasted mushrooms. So, yeah, it was good. I mean, to me, I'm very basic when it comes to the wings there. To me, it's either garlic parm or it's hot. It's one of the two.
Oh, those are all good. I mean, for garlic parm and for the lemon pepper, it just doesn't have any spice at all, but they are delicious. They are incredibly delicious. It's just hot is good as well. Blazing, you're just being a hardo. You really are. But like I said, I did have the scorpion dip rooms. I mentioned it a couple times, and I would recommend doing something like that just once, you know, if you've never had the blazing.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
No. It's a life experience. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Hot Rod, but there was like these eagle eggs on top of the mountain that the guy climbed to eat and become a better person. And it's the same thing. You eat the eagle egg. You eat the blazing wing. It cleans out your system. You have a great, great bowel movement. And so I would recommend those two. But, yeah, man, you can't go wrong with hot wings, obviously. And you can't go wrong with any sauce. Garlic parm wouldn't be in my top seven, Jason. It may be like 9 or 10. But they're all delicious. You can't go wrong. But the biggest problem has to be the bowel movement, right? Like you went to Buffalo Wild Wings, and this morning I would assume you were on the toilet all morning, right?
No, I wasn't.
Where'd the wings go?
They went in my mouth, man.
Dude, that to me is a major problem, but it's probably due to the cheese curds the more I think about it. But man, if you haven't had the cheese curds, it's just a bunch of cheese fried, and there's a lot of them. But yeah, I'm the kind of guy that goes to Buffalo Wild Wings so much that the people there recognize me. And it's sad. Like, it's real. And it's not just one Buffalo Wild Wings. Like, there are multiple locations across the Rio Grande Valley, which is where I live, where people will recognize me. And, yeah, that sucks.
Look, there's plenty of people listening to this podcast that probably have a favorite bar they go to, and the bartenders know who they are. It's not a bad thing. It just means you have good service. Look, when they know you, you know you're getting good service.
Yeah, yeah.
If the bartender doesn't know who you are, service could be shaky. Plus, if they know you're a good tipper, you know you're going to get good service.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I always try. Because you don't want to be that guy who doesn't tip and they remember you and you return.
That's what the MMA I'm going to tonight in the reserves section portion of the event. I mean, it's a small venue. You have a waitress. You just put down your credit card. When the waitress knows that you tip all the time, they keep coming in and keep filling you up with drinks. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I mean, that can ruin. So two things can ruin a Buffalo Wild Wings experience. One, poor TV options. When they just have they have 60 minutes on because they left it on too late after the NFL game ended on CBS on Sunday and they left it on CBS. that's a bad one. Bad TVs, and two, they don't refill your drinks. You know, I don't ever get mad at waiters or waitresses. You could come and take a crap on my table and I'll still tip you. I'll still tip you. I feel obligated to at least, you know, 20%, and I will still do it. I won't make a big deal, but if you could just please refill my drink, it's not something where I want to drink it, but I need to drink it because the wings are spicy and my mouth is dead. So yeah, that's another deal. Anyways, so Chris McCann, thanks for the question. Feel free to tweet at us what your favorite sauces are. I'm very interested, obviously.
But, you know, we both mentioned that Jimmy Rivera, Thomas Almeida is our number one fight of the weekend. Great matchup. It's going to kick off the main card on Fox. And as I've thought about this fight, and the reason I'm going with Jimmy Rivera is I think simply because I believe he has more ways to win the fight. Yes, Thomas Almeida could clearly knock him out. I think there's no doubt about it. But I just, you tell me, give me the more complete fighter. I'm 9 times out of 10, I'm going to pick them.
Yep. And Jimmy Rivera certainly fills that box. This is a fighter who has not lost in a very, 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 very long time. All but, back in 2008, that was the last time he lost in Ring of Combat in his second fight. Obviously, he was on that season of The Ultimate Fighter, and I thought he was going to win it, but he did not. Just a dramatic win over Uriah Faber in September. So Rivera makes a lot of sense. It makes all the sense in the world. He has a more complete game. He's very smart on his feet. I don't think he will get sucked into an absolute firefight, although I believe this will be a great fight. Still, though, I am picking Thomas Almeida, and I think we're looking at a fight of the night or a performance of the night either way from one of these two guys. I just think his offensive arsenal on the feet is going to be a bit too much, and I think he's going to bring the aggression and force the pace here and force a dramatic conflict and a result quickly. Still, though, Rivera's resume, despite only having 4 fights in the UFC, is incredibly impressive with wins over Faber and Yuri Alcantara and Pedro Munhoz and starting it off with a knockout over Marcus Brimage. So, this is a phenomenal fight, man. This is the fight that we are both most looking forward to for good reason. It's incredibly a great fight, and it's an important fight because Rivera, I do think, has been undervalued for a very long time on the MMA world for how high he is, how highly skilled he is, given the rankings or how often we think of Rivera. But that's a good pick, Jason. I just feel like Thomas Almeida may, in fact, force a quick finish here due to his aggression and his ability to land accurate strikes with from just about every other angle. But he's going to be really prone to get caught from the counter striking of Rivera, as well as simply the wrestling and grappling aspects.
You mentioned about potential performance of the night. Let me throw this one out there. Is it more likely the fight of the night bonus comes from the main card or the prelims on UFC Fight Pass?
It's got to be the main card, man.
I disagree.
The prelim could steal it, but there is such a heavy bias towards awarding them. The award itself may go to the main card, but the fight of the night may be on the prelims. It's just there's such a heavy bias towards awarding it to your main card. But what fights do you see on the prelims? Obviously, I mentioned Pepe Burgos. What else do you see there that you think could steal it?
Cal Herrera.
That's a good one as well. Even Chris Wade, Frankie Perez at lightweight, the first bout could be good as well. So even the main event on Fight Pass, Kyle Bochniak and Jermaine Kennedy. That could be pretty good. Kennedy and Bochniak are fairly solid at 145. Timothy Johnson, Junior Albini. I probably didn't pronounce Junior's last name correctly. I'll get it right on the post-fight show if we talk about him.
But is he one of the most interesting guys that you're interested in on this card, though? Because UFC debut, it's heavyweight, so you're always kind of interested in heavyweights. I mean, he's got to be up there as one of the most interesting fighters on this card. He's heavyweight, and he's only 26 years old.
Yeah, he is, man. He's been really crafted well on these AFC cards, which they aren't the best cards in the world, but Timothy Johnson is an opponent that's beatable for a young rising heavyweight. What concerns me, his nickname is Baby. That's not a good nickname at all. He's got to get rid of that. But this is a big guy at 265, And I'm intrigued. It's not a fight that I'm looking forward to just because there's a likelihood of it being incredibly boring. As we saw with Justin Willis in his fight against whoever he fought last week, the slog of about that was. So when you have two heavyweights, you know two things can happen, a quick finish or a boring fight. And I hope it's a quick finish. But anytime you have a debuting heavyweight under the age of 37, there is certainly a level of excitement. I mean, do you think he was going to come out there and look good against Timothy Johnson or no?
No, I'm going Tim Johnson.
It's a smarter pick, man. Tim Johnson's just fought better guys, and he's showcased success against some of those guys, whereas Junior has not.
I mean, the only thing about Timothy Johnson is should he, you know, he is a fairly sizable, you know, favorite, you know, over a 2-1 favorite here. But if you're looking for an underdog to play on this fight card, I mean, I think Junior is someone to look at. I mean, man, he's big odds. Gaffaro Pepe, a three to one underdog. I think that's somebody you might want to look at. How can you not look at Chris Weidman at +150? I mean, yes, as I said, not comfortable and confident in picking him to win, but nice little odds there. In terms of other underdogs on this card that stick out to me, maybe Alex Oliveira at +165.
Yeah, that one does too, because I think I'm going to pick him in that fight. See, to me, the big one is, well, first off, the one that I would kind of pencil in as something I would just look at for sure would be Weidman, because that's my pick as well. I don't know, Frankie Perez at +250 against Chris Wade. I think that fight is a bit closer than you would expect. And then again, with Godofredo Pepe at +320, as high as I am on Shane Burgos, I do think that's going to be a fight that there's going to be several moments of high contact between both these guys where they're going to put a high risk maneuvers out there. And what that essentially means is that you're prone to just get finished in a jiffy despite maybe being more talented. But just to settle in on one specific underdog pick, it would be Frankie Perez at +250 against Chris Wade.
Yeah, that's an interesting matchup there that's going to kick off the Fight Pass prelims. And then it's Burgos versus Pepe, Johnson, it's Albini, Vera, Kelher, and Bochniak versus Kennedy. As I mentioned earlier, did have an interview with Kyle Bochniak earlier this week. You can head over to MMAReport.com right now. You can watch my video interviews with Vera, Bochniak, and Anders, all a part of that fight card. You know, kind of, you know, just kind of going through my picks here. I'm going Chris Weidman, Dennis Bermudez, John Volante, Jimmy Rivera, Lyman Good, Eric Anders, Ryan LaFleur, Chase Sherman, Jeremy Kennedy, Marlon Vera, Timothy Johnson, Shane Burgos, and Chris Wade.
I'm going to go with Frankie Perez, Shane Burgos, Timothy Johnson, Marlon Vera, Kyle Bochniak, Chase Sherman, Alex Oliveira, Eric Anders, Lyman Good, Thomas Almeida, John Volante, Darren Elkins, and Chris Weidman. I guess real quick on that Elkins-Bermudez fight, how do you see that one playing out in terms of the actual content of that fight?
I think their wrestling cancels each other out, and we just have a striking matchup, and then Bermudez just gets the best of it.
Don't discount the stand-up of Elkins. I mean, Bermudez has the physicality. I do think if this is a stand-up fight, you are right that Bermudez will get the better. But Darren slowly but surely has really fortified that aspect of his game. And I also wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see something similar to the last bout where Bermudez looks good early only for Elkins to return. Although Bermudez does have an incredible – I mean, he's showing it with his takedowns. But I just like Elkins because I do think – if this becomes a wrestling match, he does become the favorite. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bermudez comes in wanting to make it a wrestling match, thinking he has the ability to out-wrestle Elkins just because of that high confidence he will have in himself.
One of the prelim fights you vaguely talked about, Ryan LaFleur and Alex Oliveira. I mean, I'm picking Ryan LaFleur in that one, but I think the question's got to be is what happens if Oliveira can keep this fight on the feet?
Yeah. I mean, even in the grappling exchanges, I would assume LaFleur would be in control. You would have Oliveira maybe slipping in and out of submission attempts. But on the feet, to me, is where he can do the most damage. And if he is going to go out there and attempt to secure submission, it's probably going to come after rocking LaFleur. So on the feet, is where I feel good about Alex Oliveira. And the reason why I'm picking him in that fight against LaFleur is just that I think in the transitional stages between the takedown defense or when space is created on the ground or on the feet, I really favor what Alex Oliveira will be able to do in those positions. But LaFleur and Oliveira is a fight on this card that really sneaks up on you that I do think is important, I do think could be good, and it's going to tell us a lot about two guys who have considerable relevance at 170. I mean, Oliveira's coming off that submission win over Tim Means in the rematch between the two. And Ryan LaFleur, man, he's just creeping up those welterweight rankings.
He is, and John Anik, Dominic Cruz, Brian Stann calling these fights on Fox on Saturday night. Of course, we're going to have a post-fight show following this event on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Just search The MMA Report. Of course, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Foy. Give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan. DGG. You can find out whenever Daniel is going to try to pick up some Buffalo Wild Wings waitress by trying to eat the hottest hot wing possible.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Or hot takes on the Houston Rockets. Anything else?
No, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, look, man, I understand that you're doing quite well financially, and if you want to go half and half with me on the Houston Rockets buying the team, more than welcome to. More than welcome to.
Here's a question. We saw what the Clippers went for. What did the Houston Rockets go for?
I think $3 billion. That's a lot of money, $3 billion. But my general rule of thumb, Jason, is you look at the numbers that people are saying, and then you go up a little bit. That, to me, is where you find the price. So I go $3 billion.
It amazes me how much they're talking about the Florida Marlins going for, or Miami Marlins, whatever they call it.
How much is that team going for, hypothetically?
Didn't they say like $1 billion?
Wow. Yeah, that would make sense, though. I mean,
and look, they struggle to draw in Miami.
Yeah, they suck. But sports, to me, like, sports is the, I mean, there's only so many teams. If you're a rich guy, you want one. And for Miami, it's a sexy city. You got 82 home games, and you got the TV deal, which is probably great, and you can probably extort the city for a new stadium in about 2.5 years. So, I mean, look, Houston is literally the fourth most populous city. It has the fourth biggest population in the entire country. It's a growing city. It has some of the best fans in the world. But seriously, though, it just has a superstar player. And you can't discount that, as well as the fact that, you know, they have a Chinese demographic due to Yao Ming, and they have a Chinese player on the up and up. I can't remember his name, but I'll see him this year in the Rio Grande Valley. So I don't know what the number is, Jason, but if there's one thing I know about what we've seen out of team purchases, people will be shocked at how expensive it is and how surprising it is that it was $3 billion.
Well, just look at the TV deal the NBA has right now.
Yeah, yeah. And whatever the TV deal will be next time, the next time they negotiate when they do a deal with online companies for an absurd amount of money, it's on the up and up. Although the salary cap did go down this year. I mean, I think that was largely due to the lack of playoff games. But the salary cap did go down. So there is a little bit of a lack of momentum, but the momentum, I mean, they're going up and up and up.
But as I said, we will have a post-fight show for UFC on Fox 25 following the conclusion of this event. You'll be able to listen to that on RadioInfluence.com, also on the various podcast apps. And, of course, we appreciate you taking time out to listen to this podcast. So that is going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast, which you always hear on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I've never seen a press conference tour ever. Like, I've never heard of that before. And to be packing arenas just to hear guys talk shit is amazing to me. And I'm going to watch every one of them. And if I'm not there to watch it, I'm going to videotape it. Because, what's his name? Conor McGregor came out and said something in the first press conference. And I heard Drew Garabo on 102.5 The Bone discussing this yesterday. First of all, if you've watched Conor McGregor throughout his fights, he openly says racist stuff, okay? He ain't hiding it. When you're calling a Mexican guy Papi Chulo, It's a line. There's a line. And there's been many other situations, okay? And Mayweather went up there and Conor McGregor said, "Dance for me, boy." Okay. As an African-American or as a black man, if somebody says, "Dance for me, boy," before the Y comes out, I'm punching you in the face, okay? Because they had a big debate on Drew Garabo's show whether that was okay or not okay. And they had, from what I heard when I was listening in the car, there was about seven people call in, Caucasian people, that said, it's okay. As a black man, I'm telling you guys, it's not okay, all right? It's not okay to call a black man boy. It's just not, okay? You guys, you can't make up rules. It's not. You can try it. Don't try it with me. You can try it with somebody. You can go through, you know, you can do some investigative journalism if you want and go call a black man boy and see how it turns out. If they don't turn on you, I don't know, but you might catch a fistful of and a faceful of something. So Conor McGregor and a lot of the different excuses were, well, he's Irish. They call a lot of people boy. The tone wasn't right. I'm telling you, I listen to the tone. I know the tone. And the tone definitely wasn't right.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.